You ever notice how solstice and solstice sound almost exactly the same?
They do.
They do. With the turning of the seasons, so too do comics change.
I don't know, but that sounded to me like the intro to Days of Our Lives. I like it.
I'm feeling introspective today.
Like sands through the
You're like
hourglass.
sand through the hourglass. You're listening to Casual Wednesdays with Doom Rocket. I'm Jared Jones. Across the table from me, as always, is MJ Kramer. Hello, MJ.
Hello, hello.
We are talking about San Diego Comic-Con news fallout, all the stuff that came out of San Diego. We didn't get to go.
It's okay.
That's fine. It's actually a lot easier to cover it from home.
Oh my god, it's so much easier.
Infinitely easier than running from panel to panel and then half-assing an article just to get it. It's a nightmare.
Yeah, just like trying to find out news just like on your phone on the con floor.
So all you chumps in San Diego this past week burning the shoe leather trying to get a story. I was sitting in my living room in my jams waiting for it to come into my inbox. So who's the Joker now? They made more money than I did.
But speaking of Jokers, that was one of the announcements. It was going to be that three Joker series. There was a lot of Geoff Johns news, but that was one of it.
That's a nice segue.
Yes.
So yeah, into the San Diego Comic-Con news. MJ, what caught your imagination? What got you excited?
Well, the DC stuff, as always, grabs my attention. There was lots of, like I said, Geoff Johns news. He had like a whole panel where he announced stuff. There's that three Jokers thing he's writing. Jason Fabek is going to be on the art.
What do you think about that?
It's fine. I'm not super into the concept. What I am looking forward to is that the long gestating, long anticipated Shazam family series that Johns and Eaglesham were supposed to have done like back in like the New 52 is finally coming out. It's pretty exciting. There's going to be a Stargirl live action TV show, which, I don't know, after seeing the trailer for that Titans show, I'm a little nervous about it.
Yeah, DC had a big con. There were some positives. There were definitely some negatives. I would say that the prospects of a Stargirl TV show that dabbles in the realm of Justice Society is a positive, whereas Titans, as a TV show, as a concept, is just an aborted idea splashed across the screen. It is hideous.
The reasoning for having it be so dark and gritty that I saw is John's talked about how the new Teen Titans, Wolfman and Perez's seminal run, was very provocative for its time and kind of pushed the envelope for the time. And so they wanted to do that, push the envelope, but for now.
So what do they do? They drink moonshine and huff glue and then like make the show? What happened?
I don't know. I don't really see how what they showed is related to the Wolfman Perez New Teen Titans, so that doesn't matter.
Well, we're not going to watch it anyway, but as a flagship series for DC Universe, the streaming service, I think this is a bad idea. But then again, I don't make those decisions, but here's where I'm at. If what John says is true, that the New Teen Titans was provocative for its time, what's provocative now is obscene. Like, there's no way you can do something that would, like, push people's buttons without freaking them out at the same time. So, here's a weird idea. Since we live in such dark and tumultuous times, how about a little sunshine? Yeah. Geoff Johns, yeah. Since people are paying you to have ideas, here's one for free. Have the Teen Titans be the Teen Titans. Maybe not Teen Titans Go, or even go to the movies. But the Titans as they're depicted in the comic books to a degree. That's just a free thought.
Yeah. You probably watched the trailer if you're listening to us. But there's a scene in it where Robin seems to, like, kill some dudes. And then somebody says, like, oh, where's Batman? And he says, fuck Batman.
Well, you forgot the bit where he stepped on a man's neck and broke it.
And Hawk and Dove are in it. And Dove, of all characters, who's, like, super dedicated to peace, total pacifist, has, like, metal sharp wings and like slices up a dude with it. Like, you can see the blood.
And this scene was cut for time for the trailer, but evidently there's this very controversial scene where the Titans first meet, snort all the ketamine, slip into a K-hole, but not before they stripped each other naked with their teeth.
Fun.
Yeah, so it's gonna be a lot. It's gonna be a hoot is what it's gonna be.
Uh-huh. As far as trailers that they debuted that I enjoyed, I liked the Shazam trailer.
Love the Shazam trailer.
That actually does look fun. Looks enjoyable.
Let me ask you a question about that real quick.
Okay.
All right, so the Billy Batson in this movie is very much like the Billy Batson of the Geoff Johns miniseries they did with Gary Frank.
The whole thing seems just like that mini, yeah.
Now, Captain Marvel in the trailer appears to be an Oshkosh Bagosh version of the Captain Marvel that we've seen in the DC Comics over the years.
I think we're not supposed to call him Captain Marvel anymore.
You know what I mean. But do you see like a personality disparity between these two characters? I don't necessarily think it's a problem. I think it might even get addressed in the movie, but as far as first impressions are concerned, I think Billy's a little too blue and glum, and Captain Marvel's a little too gee-whiz.
I think that's just what we're seeing in the trailer.
Okay.
I think we're just seeing like extremes mm-hmm. in the trailer. From what we saw, it's definitely gonna be very similar to that John's Frank thing, that like early New 52 thing.
Mm-hmm. The production of this film is still pretty early on. Pre-production, mm-hmm. Post-production special effects still are not there, so we didn't see a whole lot of wide action shots or anything like for that matter. But I got goose pimples when Billy's walking towards the camera and he says Shazam and he becomes Captain Marvel, mm-hmm. or excuse me, Shazam. That's good stuff.
Yeah. We were talking about this before. It's like Big with superpowers.
That's right.
They're leaning into the humor. They need to do this.
Especially
with
that character.
Yes.
Yeah. Humor and lightness and all that happy stuff. What'd you think of the Aquaman trailer?
Like, it looks okay. Like, I know a lot of people who are super stoked about it, but I'm worried about them utilizing that much CGI in a movie, because DC Warner Brothers are not... Mm-hmm. They haven't really proven themselves as having really great CGI. Henry Cavill's upper lip. Mm-hmm. As much as I love Mr. Khal Drogo, Jason Momoa is not a great actor.
No, he's not. Whoever decided to give Amber Heard's red hair the green light must have also been sniffing some of that Titans glue.
It's as bright as it is in the comics, and that's not a natural color.
I think one thing about the two trailers, Aquaman and Shazam, that not a lot of people are talking about, but there's a whole lot of like kids getting their ass kicked mm-hmm. in both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Arthur gets his ass handed to him by these two chubby blonde kids at the Boston Aquarium. And then there's that bit in Shazam where Billy Batson's disabled foster brother...
With a crutch. He has a crutch.
These two rat bastard kids take his crutch and knock him to the ground, and then Billy takes that crutch and kicks the crap out of those two kids.
Mm-hmm.
With Shazam, it works because Billy Batson's still a kid, but did we need the how did Aquaman become who he is story? Did that need to be told?
That's the thing, is that Aquaman just looks to be another superhero origin movie, and we've seen a lot of those.
Yeah. And when Geoff Johns got the job at DC Films, he was like, look, I wrote all these stories, and they're really the only ones that count. So let's just adapt those and move on with our lives.
It is becoming glaringly obvious that all of the origins are the ones that he's retooled.
It's been going on since Green Lantern.
Oh, I know.
And not for the best, I might add.
Yeah, I know.
Maybe that's why he's going back to comics, you think?
I mean, he's definitely got a lot of stuff in the pipeline here.
That's true.
Speaking of Aquaman.
Yes, we digress.
One of my favorite announcements of the whole week. Was Kelly Sue DeConnick
mm-hmm.
on Aquaman.
That's right.
Along with Robeson Rocha on art. I am beside myself that DC is going to be getting Ms. DeConnick monthly, possibly twice monthly.
Who'll be publishing comics the same time as G. Willow Wilson will be publishing her Wonder Woman run.
Yeah, yeah.
What a time to be a DC fan.
It's pretty great.
Mm-hmm.
And the great thing about Kelly Sue writing Aquaman is she is yet another lady at DC who is writing a character that's not a lady. It's rarer than you think it might be.
Yeah, it totally is.
Yeah, Gail Simone is writing Plastic Man,
mm-hmm.
and she's going to be writing Aquaman.
Aquaman.
Yeah. What were some of the things that like got your heart pumping?
I'm a big Grant Morrison fan. I'm very happy that he's returning to DC. I appreciate whenever he needs to go and get his batteries recharged or take peyote out in the desert, whatever he needs to do. But when he finally comes back to tell a story, it's usually really big, huge, and worthy of the wait. For example, we waited forever for Multiversity, right? Well, we finally got it, and, you know, it was not his finest work. It wasn't the Seven Soldiers level creative daring that we thought it might be. But
it was pretty great, though.
It was still pretty awesome compared to a lot of other things that's been published around that time. And, of course, prior to that, All-Star Superman. So when he does these big epics, it's usually worthwhile. But what I like about the Green Lantern thing that he is doing with Liam Sharp, this seems a little scaled back. For a cosmic story, it seems like it's toned down a bit. It's going to be a cop drama, ostensibly in space, which I have felt has been like an angle of the Green Lantern mythos that doesn't get explored too often. There's a lot of lip service paid to the Green Lantern core, but it's usually in service to their function in like the Spectrum core in the space, especially in the post-Geoff Johns run.
One day I'm going to get you to read the Tomasi Gleason Green Lantern Corps run, and you are going to like it.
I have a feeling I will, because I like that team a lot.
Yeah.
Incidentally, I don't care that Peter Tomasi's writing Detective Comics.
I think it'll be good.
Or Doug Monkey drawing Batman again.
I like Doug Monkey.
I like both of them, too. I mean, we had Tomasi's run on Batman. He did Batman and Robin.
But we talked about this a couple days ago. If they go more into the angle of Detective Comics and really focus on him, him being the world's greatest detective, that'd be pretty cool.
Ironically, Detective Comics has not been about detective work for eons, which I always feel like is a mistake. That's what I like about the new Tom King run right now that he's doing with Lee Weeks, is that it's like really quiet. It's like a story that takes place in Gotham, deals with the people in Gotham, deals with how they perceive justice and all this stuff, and it's A-plus stuff. That's how Batman should always be in his own books.
I feel like more writers should be given the leeway to do like a more quiet story like that, and Tom King is like the only one.
Yeah, he's the only one who's allowed to do it. Everyone else has to like write something in service to the event that's about to happen.
Yeah, it's just something crazy going on.
I think after Metal, we're all a little spent.
Yeah.
But aside from that, Morrison back on DC, A-plus stuff. I am looking forward to Black Crown's new book, Lodger, by the Laphams, David and Maria. David, who has long been on his own creator-owned Straight Bullets, is doing a crime story. I think it's 6 issues.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. For Shelley Bond over on Black Crown Imprint. Very excited to check that out. Because I think crime is something that adheres itself well to the aesthetics of Black Crown. Aside from that, though,
a lot of the Marvel stuff I liked, too. Like, it wasn't as big and explosive as a lot of DC's announcements. But there's a new Jessica Jones series that's going to be digital first that Kelly Thompson is writing with Mattia DeLulis on art. It's going to be digital first and then being printed as like a graphic novel, I guess. And they're doing that with a Spider-Man story and also with a Luke Cage story.
Yeah.
There's also going to be a new Spider-Gwen book, since Spider-Gwen sadly just ended. It's going to be called Spider-Gwen, a.k.a. Ghost Spider.
Not a great title.
It's fine. They're wanting to align this more with the other properties in which they don't call her Spider-Gwen, they call her Ghost Spider. But it's going to be written by the novelist Seanan McGuire. Art by an artist named Rosie Kirmpa, whose art I'm not familiar with, but looking forward to it. Covers are going to be by Bengal. And then there's going to be a Spider-Girls mini that's going to be written by Jody Hauser.
That should be fun.
Yeah. Chelsea Kane is coming back to Marvel doing a 6-issue Vision series.
Good for her.
Co-written with her husband.
She did not have to do that.
Yeah, right? Well, she's also doing that that Image series that we did in last month's solicitations recap. That looks great. But the art on this is going to be by Odd Cook, whose art is so fantastic. She did the art on the most recent Wiccan Divine one-shot, the 1923 one, maybe? Mm-hmm. Colors by Jordi Belair. I'm excited about that. And then there's the new Marvel Knights thing that apparently Donny Cates is heading. And Teenie Howard is going to be participating in that.
We have a roster of creators and little else to go on. But it's in conjunction with the 20th anniversary of the first launch of the Marvel Knights thing, which I think is a very awesome thing to do, considering that Marvel Knights really recharged a lot of these characters, like Black Panther and Daredevil especially. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And Donny Cates being in charge of it is awesome. Hopefully it doesn't go to his head.
Mm-hmm. The one ridiculous Marvel thing that jumped out of both of us was there was that Iron Fist panel that Jeff Loeb was at and was wearing that karate uniform or something.
So here's the thing. Iron Fist was not a home run for Marvel Studios, not in the way that they wanted it to be, and certainly not in the way where Jeff Loeb could pull a little stupid stunt like that and get away with it scot-free.
And, like, that's not even, like, what Iron Fist... That's not even the martial art Iron Fist... He does kung fu.
Now, the funny thing about that is that I know that Jeff Loeb is the boss, so pretty much what he says goes, but isn't that what public relations are for? Aren't they, like, the last check...
Yeah.
Against unruly power? Aren't they the ones that go, you know, the optics aren't great on this?
Yeah, and we already like, have some bad news going around with C.B. Sobolski and Akira,
and
whatever
his
fake name was.
Yeah, Akira Yoshida. And here comes Jeff Loeb walking into Hall H dressed like Ralph Macchio in The Karate Kid. Bad idea.
It's ridiculous.
Bad form. Anyway, MJ, is there any other SDCC news that you're excited about?
I think that was everything.
I got one.
Okay.
Dark Horse is putting out a production of William Gibson's unproduced screenplay for Alien 3. Now, if you've watched the Alien 3 supplementary materials on DVD, which ages all of us if you have, it goes into what Gibson had in mind.
Grandfather of cyberpunk.
Precisely right. Was going to write the screenplay, directed by David Fincher, and oh my god, my head just exploded, but it never happened. Really awesome concepts in there. I think there was a planet made out of wood.
What?
All sorts of crazy shit. The fact that it's getting produced at all in comic book form encourages me quite a bit. That it's by Dark Horse makes me even more excited because they did the George Lucas unproduced treatments for the Star Wars way back when. And that turned out to be quite awesome. So, hooray. Overall, MJ, what would you grade this SDCC? Is it a thumbs up, thumbs down? What do you give it?
Thumbs up.
Thumbs up?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like I said, I was back here in Chicago just getting real excited about most everything except for not that Titans trailer.
As far as like comic popular media is concerned, you don't feel like we're finally choking on the dregs?
No, I don't think so at all.
Getting mustering enthusiasm for properties such as Shazam. And
no.
Aquaman and Iron Fist Season 2.
What? I do not need to muster enthusiasm for 2 hours of Jason Momoa swimming shirtless, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to muster. That muster is itself, okay?
Oh, yeah? You got plenty of muster?
Yeah.
For that hot dog?
What about you, Jared? What's your are you thumbs up or thumbs down for 2018?
Johnny Depp was there.
Oh, that's right. And they brought him into the same panel as Amber Heard.
That's not to say that I'm not excited about a lot of this stuff.
Yes.
Because I am, and you know I am.
Yes.
But as far as Hall H assembling the Avengers for the first time, we did not get a big-time moment like that this year.
Yeah, I guess not.
So,
but I'm looking more at the lowly comic end of it, and it makes me happy.
Mm-hmm. Well, in that regard, SDCC was a raging success.
Yes.
Okay. So from San Diego Comic-Con, brouhaha, we move our eyes towards the future. October solicits for 2018. MJ, are you ready?
Yeah.
All right, let's break it down. We're going to do it by publisher. Marvel, DC, Image, and Miscellaneous in that order.
Okay.
Does that sound okay?
Sounds good.
All right, Marvel.
Big stuff that's starting up, Spider-Geddon. Mm-hmm. Issues number 1 and 2 are going to be out in October. And a couple of different tie-in miniseries to that are going to start.
A couple, like 20.
Yeah, not 20. Spider-Force number 1, Christopher Priest and Paulo Sequeira on that. Vault of Spiders, Spider-Girls. That one's going to be by Jody Hauser and Andreas Genelet. And the aforementioned Spider-Gwen, a.k.a. Ghost Spider series, is starting out of this. They don't say that this is a mini, though. So I assume it's an ongoing. They don't say otherwise. That
one
looks
cool.
Seems
odd that they would put an end to the Latour Rodriguez run, only to move on to another ongoing with a completely new creative team.
I think they wanted to make sure that that run was its own thing. And you were looking forward to that. Was a Superior Octopus?
No, I wasn't looking forward to it. It gave you that impression.
I thought you were. Never mind.
I like the Superior Spider-Man run okay.
Yeah.
Dan Slott's not on the book. Christos Gage is going to be writing it with Mike Hawthorne.
Okay.
I don't know. The whole Spider-Geddon thing, the whole Spider-Verse thing, I never got it. I'm a big Spider-Man fan, but I don't understand the need to perpetuate the brand that far. I mean, I know they want to squeeze as much money out of it as they possibly can. It's their IP. It's the right to do it. It's too much. It's too much.
I'm definitely looking more forward to Into the Spider-Verse than this thing. A book that I am looking forward to, though, is that new Shuri ongoing. Or I think it's an ongoing. I don't know. The new Shuri number 1,
sure.
Anyway. Written by Inyedi Okorafor, art by Leonardo Romero, colors by Jordi Belair. We talked about this before. I'm super stoked about that.
I know you are.
The 4th issue of Infinity Wars comes out. There's going to be 3 new tie-in miniseries starting. Infinity Wars Sleepwalker, Infinity Wars Weapon Hex, and Infinity Wars Arachnite. And that's in addition to the 2 that started the month previous, which are Iron Hammer and Soldier Supreme. They seem like amalgam sort of characters.
So they didn't borrow characters from other publishers. They're just
Marvel to the max. So those might be fun. There's also The Unstoppable Wasp is coming back.
5-issue mini.
Yes. Jeremy Whitley's back writing. Guruhuru is going to be drawing it.
I like their art.
No, me too.
It's great.
Yeah. Perfect for like a kid-centric book.
Mm-hmm.
I remember there were a couple Power Pack minis that they did the art for and so perfectly suited.
Here's a weird one. Black Panther versus Deadpool.
Yeah. Written by our pal Daniel Kibblesmith. Be fun. They do tons and tons of these Deadpool miniseries, and they keep on selling or they wouldn't make more of them.
It's true. Where Black Panther's the straight man and Deadpool's like, look at my balls. Isn't this crazy?
I doubt it's going to get that blue, but it's probably going to approach being that blue. I think it'll be funny. Kibble Smith is a funny dude. There's a reason he writes for Colbert.
It's true.
Another off-the-wall miniseries, Shatterstar number 105.
Written by Tim Seeley.
Mm-hmm. Art by Carlos Villa. That'd be fun.
I don't have any attachment to Shatterstar as a character, so I can't muster any enthusiasm for it.
Tim. I don't know either, but yeah, I think this is a good character for Tim to kind of go crazy with. I think it'll be fun.
They're getting rid of X-Men Gold and X-Men Blue.
Yeah.
X-Men Red, killing it critically. I don't know how well it's doing in sales, but apparently good enough that it's still going.
Mm-hmm.
X-Men Black, we thought was going to be the new X-Book instead is going to be a line of one-shots. Five yeah. one-shots, in fact.
Five one-shots that are all $5 each.
Yes.
Great. I think it's fine. I'm not the biggest X-Men fan. I don't really have much of a connection to any of these characters other than maybe Magneto.
What do you think about Chris Claremont coming back to write the Magneto one-shot?
Well, all of the Chris Claremont stuff I've read recently has read like something that's not written with a modern audience in mind. So I do like Dalibor Telagic, if that's how you say it. I do like his art. But the rest of these I don't really care about. I like Nick Bradshaw. I like Chris Bakalo.
I'll read the Mojo one because Scott Aukerman's writing it. And Scott Aukerman's hilarious.
Yeah?
Yeah. Comedy Bang Bang. It's the greatest podcast to ever podcast. And the show is pretty good, too.
Okay.
That's right. He was also a writer on Mr. Show, Bob and David, I believe. Oh. That's right. Yeah.
But there's not a ton else that...
I got one.
What?
I got one Marvel solicit that I'm very excited for.
Okay.
And it's Marvel 2-in-1, number 11.
Okay.
Where instead of the Thing teaming up with Johnny Storm, he's teaming up with Reed Richards. This is what the solicit info says. Fantastic Four are back, but there's fallout from their absence, both in the universe and in the family. The Thing and Mr. Fantastic go on a voyage to rectify mistakes and heal wounds. But is it too late? And you know, Chip Zdarsky, that has a double meaning. The mistakes are probably referring to both the cosmic and the personal.
Of course.
And Ben and Reed, while they are best friends, there's a lot of enmity there. There's a lot of unspokenness going on there. Because, of course, Reed Richards, originally in the Lee Kirby run, felt very guilty about how Ben Grimm had become disfigured and devoted his entire life to cure him. Mm-hmm. Even used the word cure as if there was something wrong with Ben Grimm.
Mm-hmm.
And while Ben has since grown accustomed to his new lot in life, that particular issue never got itself. I don't know. I love the Fantastic Four, so the fact that they're actually going to be doing like a Ben and Reed go off on their own and hash it out kind of storyline, that's the kind of shit that I will read. So I'm looking forward to that.
I'm glad you're looking forward to something. Last week we mentioned all those what-ifs that they're doing. They're also doing like their True Believers month, which are their dollar reprints. This mm-hmm. month it's going to be reprints of a whole shit ton of what-ifs. Like
some of those
what-ifs
are gold, though.
Yeah. Tons of them. That's really cool. I love those True Believer dollar issues.
You
I
do.
Think they're... I ordered pretty much every single one of the Fantastic Four ones that are coming out this month.
We could paper the walls with them.
I think that's a fun idea, sir.
We're not actually going to do that.
But those dollar reprints are great, and the what-ifs are prime fodder for that, I think. Right. Old Man Logan number 50 is going to be its final issue.
Good.
Well, you know, priming the return of regular... Logan Wolverine.
Yogan?
Yogan.
Young Logan. Yogan. I couldn't give a shit about Wolverine, so whatever.
And then as far as their trade paperbacks go, there's a bunch of volume ones coming out, like the first Venom, Donny Cates volumes coming out, first Immortal Hulk, first Domino, first Weapon H. I'm kind of annoyed that the title of the Venom one is Venom by Donny Cates. Doesn't mention Mr. Stegman, because they did that for his Thanos. Mm-hmm. His recent, it's like Thanos by Donny Cates, and it's like, hey, why don't we share the marquee?
And isn't his head swollen enough?
I don't know. It's definitely pink.
It turned pink?
It's pink. But I'm more excited about the graphic novels they're releasing that are tie-ins to Into the Spider-Verse, because they are like kid-sized, kids-priced at $10 each. Little compilations of stuff that ties into the movie. So they've got Spider-Man into the Spider-Verse Fearsome Foes, and it's got some Lee Ditko, some Wolfman, Conway, Buscema, Bendis, and Bagley. And then they've got another one, a Miles Morales one, that is the Bendis Pacelli stuff. They've got one that's Spider-Gwen, and they've got one that's from the Spider-Men miniseries. I'm really excited. These are going to be available for kids to tie into this animated movie. I'm just excited to stock these in our kids section.
Moving on, finally, to DC. So, Sandman Universe at this point will be self-perpetuating. We got two new debuts, the Books of Magic and Lucifer, both kick out in October.
They're also putting out this really cool Vertigo hardcover.
Yeah, 25 years, celebration of 25 years hardcover, curated by Scott Brian Wilson, with introduction by Scott Snyder and afterward by Mark Doyle. There's at least three human beings that are missing. I was thinking like Karen Berger. I was thinking like Shelley Bond. I was thinking like Jamie Rich.
That's true. It's weird that Shelley and Karen aren't on there, right? But it looks like they're mostly focusing on the creative end of it. But I mean, Paul Levitz is in here, so who knows?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, this is going to be a 400-page hardcover. Comes out at the beginning of November. I think it'll look really nice. think I'm going to maybe put this on my Christmas list.
For
we'll
the
see.
Vertigo completists. But of course, the next debut for Vertigo kicks out in October. That is Hexwives, number one, written by Ben Blacker with art by Mirka Andolfo. Border Town will be in its second issue. And as I said, all the Sandman Universe stuff will be on its way with The Dreaming, number two, and House of Whispers.
And then for the regular DCU stuff, the one cool thing that jumped out at me was that they're doing a Batman Secret Files issue. Yeah. They're going back to doing Secret Files. That's pretty crazy. And they're doing this Cursed Comics Cavalcade.
Now, what's interesting about that is that it's just one of at least 200 titles that James Tynion IV will be writing in the month of October. Get a load of this. On top of the Cavalcade, which is an anthology, a horror anthology that DC puts out every year, you've got Wonder Woman and Justice League Dark, The Witching Hour, number one, with art by Jesus Moreno, Wonder Woman 56 and 57, with art by Manuela Lupacchino and Ray McCarthy, Justice League Dark, number four, with Alvaro Martinez and Raul Fernandez on art, and I think that's it. But that's still a lot.
Well, that is like a five-issue weekly event, I guess.
The Witching Hour?
Yeah. Mm. It's crossing over between the Justice League Dark and Wonder Woman. I think that might be fun. It's cool. It's going to be focusing on Hecate, who's like a witch goddess, pretty much.
Oh, heck.
Yes. The Cursed Comics Cavalcade, I think the main thing that's jumping out to me is that it's got a writing and an art credit by Ms. Becky Cloonan. And any time that we get sequentials by Ms. Becky Cloonan is a time to celebrate.
Yeah, sure.
I'm pretty excited to see whatever spooky, creepy thing she's going to be adding to this Halloween anthology they always do.
It's always nice also to know the people that you like are making money.
Yes, definitely. I like that she's getting checks from DC. That makes me happy. One silly thing that DC is doing this month is enhanced foil covers.
Some of them look really awesome.
No, they look really cool, but anytime they do these novelty goddamn covers, it just, people keep on buying them because, yeah, stores order them. But there's pretty much one per series about, even like the twice monthly books, just one of them is getting the foil cover.
The Dan Panosian Flash one is awesome, and I might actually want to get that.
There's a couple by Dan Panosian. The Catwoman Joelle Jones one looks cool.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see the Detective Comics one that John Paul Leon is doing?
I saw that one. Did you see the one that Steve Root did for Action Comics?
No.
I think I showed this to you. It's Superman. It's like blue.
Oh,
and he's flying over
was
all those ducks.
Oh, I didn't realize that was that. Yeah, that is gorgeous.
We can paint that on our ceiling over the bed.
I would like you to start doing that tonight.
No.
Yes.
A couple of weird things for DC. Nightwing turns 50, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
It's not weird, it's just awesome. But Jeff Lemire, I'm a little behind on the Terrifics, but it appears that he's putting Dr. Doom in the DCU. There's a character named Doc Dredd.
Oh, really?
And there's a cover with him in it, and he looks exactly like Dr. Doom. So pretty much what Jeff Lemire is doing, maybe he was writing like 20 scripts to Black Hammer one night at his house, and like there was a leak from the bathroom upstairs, and he went to go fix it, and he accidentally slipped on the tile and hit his head on the sink, and when he woke up, all he could do was write Black Hammer stories, because he doesn't know that there are characters like the Cyborg Superman, for example, or Lex Luthor, that are Dr. Doom analogs, in a way, that he could use in his silly Fantastic Four analog story, instead of like aggressively trying to put Dr. Doom into a DC story.
I think it's fun. I think you should go with it. He's Jeff Lemire. Something fun that DC is doing. October is always a thing called 24-Hour Comics Day, where comic shops sponsor a thing and they stay open 24 hours for people to draw a comic mm-hmm. within that 24-hour period.
It's true.
So DC is printing these blank comics that are going to be $3, I guess. A 16-page interior comic, uncoated 80-pound paper, a Batman one, a Superman one, and a Wonder Woman one that are specifically made to make a 24-hour comic day comic on, which is a really cool thing that they're doing. Sometimes DC makes leaps in weird directions, and that's what this is, but I think it's a good one.
You got anything else for DC?
Well, they've got a lot of stuff is The Road to Drowned Earth, which is that Justice League. Well, I think it's gonna cross over with the Aquaman book. This is the same way in the 2 months previous to this one, it's going to be Suicide Squad crossing over with Aquaman.
So it can galvanize anticipation for the Aquaman movie everyone's pretty tepid about.
I think some people are excited. I mean, we're not, but they're doing a couple more Hanna-Barbera crossovers.
Yeah.
There's a Deathstroke Yogi Bear one.
Mm-hmm.
The Green Lantern Huckleberry Hound one might be cool. It's written by Mark Russell. The Mark Russell ones are always pretty fun.
Yeah, and that one's got me.
Set against a turbulent backdrop of the early 1970s, Green Lantern and Huckleberry Hound joined forces to take a stand on the issues of that era. And it's going to be, thank goodness, Green Lantern, John Stewart, and not Hal Jordan. Art's going to be by Rick Leonardi in that one. There's also going to be a Nightwing McGilla Gorilla special written by Heath Corson, who did that Bizarro series.
Yeah, but it's got Tom Grummett art. And I like Tom Grummett a lot.
Yeah?
I think he's awesome. I don't know why he doesn't get as much work. Paul Politti gets work all the time, but Tom Grummett doesn't. Something's got to give.
And the one that I know you are going to be excited about is the Superman Top Cat special written by your fave, Dan DiDio, with art by another fave, Shane Davis.
While it's true Dan DiDio is my favorite, Shane Davis is not my favorite artist in any reality. And teaming Superman with Top Cat doesn't make any damn sense. Was George Jetson unavailable?
George Jetson?
He's a patriarch of a family, you know. Superman's a patriarch of a family. They got a lot of notes that they can compare.
I guess so. They've both seen the many parts of space.
Top Cat.
I don't know. I didn't pitch that shit, man. Don't look at me.
Dan DiDio didn't even have to pitch. He was just like, I'm going to do this. It's going to be terrific. Wait till you read it. You're not going to believe it.
One thing that I noticed in this this month solicits, the art on Catwoman is going to be by Fernando Blanco and not Joel Jones, although she's still writing. So it's kind of a bummer.
It was inevitable. There was no way she's going to be able to write and draw that.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm good with them giving her a month off to catch up with the rest of it. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, kind of sad. I love her art.
It's not surprising, though.
Yeah. Green Lantern's 57 is going to be its final issue before they do the whole relaunching with Morrison and Sharp.
Where's Dan Jurgens going to go? Because they kicked him off Action to make room for their best friend, Brian Michael Bendis. They love him so damn much. And now Dan Jurgens is over on Green Lanterns, but not forever. Where's he go next?
I'm sure they'll figure something out for him.
They better.
Your bud Grant Morrison is going to be co-writing the Sideways annual with Dan DiDio.
Yeah.
Where the seven soldiers are going to show up.
Yeah, that one's going to be odd, but also odd in a way that'll get me to actually read one of these damn New Age of Heroes books, aside from the Terrifics.
Mm-hmm.
I am subscribed to that book, Sideways.
I know.
The only one aside from Terrifics that I actually bother to flip through, so. And it's because Dan gets me with his enthusiasm.
Yeah. He's your bud, I know. They're doing the Black Label line stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They're reprinting All-Star Superman in a new trade paperback as part of that Black Label line.
That's
weird to me.
We've got the Absolute Editions, trades, and the single issues. You think for a second I'm going to buy All-Star Superman under a Black Label that's made for horny 45-year-old men? I don't think so.
Yeah, I feel like All-Star Superman is a weird one to put in there because they've really made it sound like this is the mature stuff. You know, like this is the stuff you put behind the curtain adult.
While there are mature themes in All-Star Superman, it's like, I don't think people understand the difference between maturity and severity.
Or just like darkness and grittiness, you know?
Mm-hmm. And confusing that with sophistication, I think that gets lost.
I think that is comics in the last 20 years to a T. That is all it is. Justice League Volume 1, the totality, is going to be coming out. The first seven issues of Scott Snyder and James Tynan's Justice League with art by Jim Chung, Jorge Jimenez, Doug Monkey, and others.
Mm-hmm.
The Mr. Miracle trade finally comes out.
Is it the collected 12 issues?
Yes, okay. All 12 issues. Only $25. 12 issues, that's pretty great.
What a deal.
Yeah. The Justice League Power Rangers trade is going to come out. And scoff as you may, I certainly do, but the Shattered Grid crossover that Mighty Morphin Power Rangers has been doing has sold bananas at my store.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand it. So I'm sure this trade is going to sell like crazy, too.
And Boom just recently announced that they're going to do a Beyond the Grid storyline.
Oh, of course they are. So. They're going to milk this shit.
Definitely.
Yeah. The Volume 2 of The Sandman is getting reprinted again. And I was worried about this last month, that they're reprinting the entire 10 volumes of Sandman in a new 30th anniversary edition. And it looks like that's what they're doing. Cool thing about this one, new introduction by Kelly Sue DeConnick. So that's pretty cool.
You can read it in the store.
I'm not saying I want it. No, I used to do a thing where I would buy every new version
yes,
of Sandman.
I
stopped.
Thank you.
I have the first edition hardcovers. That's all I need.
We'll be buried under these comics.
Specifically under Sandman comics. Wonder Woman by Phil Jimenez, Omnibus. That shit looks rad. His run on Wonder Woman was great. And it also includes his Return of Donna Troy miniseries.
Which has since been retconned.
Shut up, man. Shut up.
Sorry.
It looks cool. There's also a DC Bombshells Big Barda statue that has her as a roller derby girl. That's pretty great. And the Joelle Jones designed DC CoverGirl statue line. They're doing a Mira. Oh my God, it's beautiful. It looks great.
You look great.
No, you. Okay, on to Image then.
So with Image Comics, there are quite a few debuts, as there often are every month. A couple that caught my eye. You got Sam Humphries teaming up with Jen Bartel.
This is the main one that I'm excited about.
Blackbird.
My favorite announcement from the last Image Expo. Anything with Jen Bartel art, I want to see. And I'm really excited to see her do more interiors.
Mm-hmm. Then you've got Jerry Duggan, artist John McCrae, book called Dead Rabbit, which scratches my early 90s DC itch pretty well.
Another debut that looks kind of cool is Infinite Dark number 1, written by Ryan Candy. With art by Andrea Muti. The solicit for that is, the universe ended, but on board the void station Orpheus, a skeleton crew of humanity survived. The last 2,000 souls waiting for a second big bang that may never come. Now, 2 years into their voyage, security director Deva Carell investigates the station's first murder and the otherworldly motives behind it. Sounds cool to me.
But if the universe ended, where are they floating in? Because the universe contains time, space, and gravity.
We've been watching Cosmos, can you tell?
Well, I'm just saying, if there's no universe, then what the hell are they floating in? Answer that, Ryan Katie.
I'm sure Mr. Katie will answer these questions and more in
the
debut
answers.
Issue.
I want them right now.
Also, another number one that looks amazing to me, Murder Falcon number 1 by Daniel Warren Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
This
sometimes it's just so easy, isn't it?
This Murder Falcon character is powered by heavy metal, and this character, Jake, plays his guitar, and it fuels Murder Falcon into all-out kung fu fury on those that seek to conquer Earth.
It reminds me of a video game that Jack Black did a few years back.
The solicit text ends in, "It's time to shred."
Of course it is.
I'm real excited. Daniel Warren Johnson is both writing and arting it, as usual, with Mike Spicer on colors.
It's not just
looks great.
It's not just shooting fish in the barrel. The barrel is made of fish.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Also, Witch's Bad Egg Halloween Special is going to be coming out. It's a collection of those little shorts that were in the back of Image Plus.
Now, that's what I'm looking forward to reading, because I don't catch up on Image Plus hardly ever.
Oh, yeah.
So reading this thing will be awesome.
Snyder is better when he's writing his horror stuff.
I agree.
So that Man Who Laughs thing might be cool. I'm not saying it's for me, but I think that there is an audience that will eat it up with a spoon, especially with art by Jacques.
Mm-hmm. There are little robins that say crow.
I know.
They don't say bar, but you know they want to.
I know. Yeah. I know.
And they're in chains, and they're like dogs.
Uh-huh. I saw.
The Batman Who Laughs looks like Judge Death.
I know.
And Rebellion's been really cool about not suing DC about it.
Or like the voice of Sauron.
Yeah, the mouth of Sauron, yeah.
That's what I meant.
I know what you meant.
But anyway, there's this graphic novel that's coming out called Norway Book 1, The Black Bull of Norway. And the reason it kind of jumped out at me is it is siblings who are the writer-artist team on this, Kat Seaton and Kit Seaton. And I think their names are adorable. The art looks really cool, too, and it sounds like cool fantasy that is straight up my alley.
Cool.
Yeah, very cool.
I got one for you.
What?
Redlands, issue number 7. Redlands returns.
The return.
And they come back in October because...
Because Halloween.
Well, duh, because Jordy Belair is on point.
Yeah.
I'm excited for that. And Shanghai Red, unfortunately, comes to an end with issue number 5.
That's okay. Sabella's got a shit ton of stuff in the pipeline, so he can do all this stuff. A lot of trades come out. Which is great. The first volume of Gideon Falls comes out, which I'm very excited about. And it's $10. Image has been kind of backing away from doing the $10 volume ones lately, and I'm really glad to see that is a $10 trade. They're doing the Fade Out in one paperback.
Actually, that caught my eye.
Yes, all 12 issues in one paperback instead of split into 3 little tiny ones for some stupid reason.
For money.
Yeah, well, this is $25 for all 12 issues. That is great.
And it's like 300 pages, right?
It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's going to be a big book.
That's a bargain.
Yeah. Also, I know we're not big fans of Miller here in this house, of Mark Miller or Miller World, but Hit Girl number 9 sees Raphael Albuquerque taking over on art, co-writing with Raphael Scavone. That's double the Raphaels for
your
money.
I feel like Raphael Albuquerque did a Hit Girl not too long ago.
Maybe
just covers,
but
I don't know.
This is him co-writing with and doing the art. I might read this just because of that, because he's fucking great. Dark Horse put out a little preview of its solicits, and Black Hammer Age of Doom number 6 is going to have art by Rich Tommaso.
Instead of Dean Ormston?
Yeah.
I don't know if I like that.
I'm keeping my mind open. I did love Spy Seal by Mr. Tommaso.
I like Rich Tommaso. Why wouldn't they just wait for Dean Ormston to get his work done?
Well, they did a fill-in in the very first run of Black Hammer. I feel like it was Rubin, maybe somebody else.
It was David Rubin, you're right.
So I think this is fine. Give Mr. Ormston some time to catch up.
You're absolutely right. I gave it 10 seconds thought, changed my mind, like the idea.
Okay, cool.
For all the other publishers, for God's sakes, Monday's a good day as any to release your solicits. There's no reason to wait until the middle of the week.
They're all still hungover from San Diego.
I don't care. They do this every month. You ready to do your top five?
I am.
Well, let's do it.
Are you?
I was born ready.
Okay.
All right, MJ. I'm going to have you kick us off this week.
All right. I'm going to kick us off with Justice League Dark number one. Written by James Tynion IV. Pencils by Alvaro Martinez Bueno. Inks by Raul Fernandez. Colors by Brad Anderson. Letters by Rob Lee. This is the team that Wonder Woman is heading.
That's right.
Also, the team also contains Zatanna, Swamp Thing, Detective Chimp, and Man-Bat. Wonder Woman's in this. I like James Tynion.
I do too.
I'm looking forward to it. Also, the variant cover by Greg Capullo is top notch.
I really like that cover.
It's super pretty.
It's really good.
Yeah. What's your first one, Jonesy?
My first one's X-Men Grand Design, Second Genesis, number one.
Oh, I would never have guessed you picked that.
Hey, look, I don't like the X-Men. An X-Men book would never appear in my top five. Last time it did was, in fact, the first two issues of X-Men Grand Design. Because it's really awesome. Episcore has a way of distilling, what, 40, 50 years of X-Men lore down to
very convoluted lore.
Easily digestible lore, which I appreciate, and actually makes it feel like there's like this big schematic in mind for the entire story. Hence the title, Grand Design, as opposed to just a bunch of random shit that happened, which is actually the case.
Yeah, people being like, hey, I'll write this in and have this retcon this way.
I actually had somebody say to me when the first two issues come out, I don't like that how everything just leads up to the Dark Phoenix. And I'm like, shut up. Just shut up.
Yeah, you were that
That's
angry.
What I said. Then I gave him a swirly. Made the X-Men work for me. And that's all that matters.
Yay, Ed Piskor.
What's next for you, Andy?
My next one is actually an X-Men book. Mr. and Mrs. X.
Oh, okay.
Written by Kelly Thompson. Art by Oscar Bazaldúa. Colors by Frank D'Armada. Letters by VC's Joe Sabino. This is the book that is post-Rogue and Gambit getting married.
So, like, what's it about? Their honeymoon?
I guess this is about them having fun.
Can they touch each other now?
I think so. If I recall correctly, in the Rogue and Gambit mini that Kelly Thompson also wrote, Rogue had figured out a way to control her powers that
way. Oh,
like
I see.
That.
Okay, good for her.
So that's why when the spoiler cover of X-Men Gold number 30, when they get married, they're actually able to smooch. What's your next one, Jones?
New World number one from Image Comics.
It looks so good.
It does. It's an oversized issue, but priced only at $5.
No, it's a really big issue.
It's a big, big issue. What is it, 48 pages?
Both of the books that you picked so far have been like really thick.
Yeah,
thick
really
issues.
Thick. These are really solid, long, awesome reads.
Yeah.
So if you're looking for something substantive to really, you know, sink your teeth into, Grand Design, The New World of Two Issues, I definitely recommend. This one's written by Alish Kott, art by Trad Moore, colors by Heather Moore, letters by Clayton Cowles, and the design, the glorious design, is by Mr. Tom Muller, one of the best graphic designers in the comics biz right now. New World looks fantastic. We ran an extended preview on Doom Rocket. We ran an advanced review under our imagery feature. We are 100% behind this book. I recommend it now. Go check it out. New World number one. MJ, what's next for you?
My next one is from Boom Studios. It is Bone Parish number one, written by Cullen Bunn, art by Jonas Scarf.
Colors. Hey, I got a question for you. Continue
what?
With that cat.
What?
Do you actually read all these Cullen Bunn books?
I start them.
You start them? Okay,
yes.
Fair enough.
I didn't finish Regression, but I read the first bunch of issues of that. The Unsound was probably my favorite of his recent ones, but I want to talk about Bone Parish.
Okay, fine.
This takes place in, like, New Orleans. Really cool, creepy, you know, cemetery shit. Colors by Alex Guimaraes. Letters by Ed Dukeshire. Horror by Cullen Bunn, his creator-owned stuff.
I'm just saying, you're always hype about the debuts, but we never hear you talk about anything for any of these books afterwards.
Because there's always a new debut to hype.
That's why I say that there are two Cullen Bunn.
Maybe there's the creator-owned horror book Cullen Bunn, and then there's like superhero Cullen Bunn.
I'm thinking like it's the Prestige.
Yeah?
Like they're twins, and one is in disguise and helps him, like is his assistant or intern, and then they just swap when they need to like relieve steam or not be on all the time.
Okay.
But they're both like genius and produce consistently.
Okay.
That's what
okay.
I think. That's what I think.
I think this is a fun idea. I think we should ask him next time we see him at a con.
No.
Yeah, I'm totally gonna ask him.
Cause he'll spaz out and he'll like make a break for it. You won't get any answers for it. It'll just be awkward silence.
What's your next book this week?
A finale, or at least the end of an arc. Punk's Not Dead, number 6 from Black Crown and IDW Publishing. It's written by David Barnett, art by Martin Simmons, letters by Aditya Bidikar. Love Punk's Not Dead. It's probably going to end up in my best of list at the end of the year. Wraps up its first arc, which was rip-roaring fun.
And the art is so pretty.
And Martin Simmons is such a find. I mean, I only knew about him after they announced the series, and I went back and checked out his old work, and it was amazing. And the stuff that he's doing now is top-notch. Like, Marvel's starting to pick him up for covers. Ron Simmons is going to be all over the place in about 5 years. So in the meantime, get on the ground floor. Punk's not dead. Get the trade when it comes out and get issue number 6 this week. That's my next pick. What's next for you?
Wonder Woman number 51. Written by Steve Orlando, art by Laura Braga, colors by Romulo Fiardo Jr., letters by Saida Timofante. I'm really excited. Orlando's on this book now and not Robinson. The focus of the book seems to be taken away from Wonder Woman's goddamn brother.
Are they sticking with that? Does she have a brother now?
She did. I'm like a few issues behind because it's been a little slow going. So I got to read the last like 3 issues before this one.
Sure.
I assume he's still alive unless they killed him.
They'll probably Chris Kent him or something.
Who knows? We'll see. This issue has Diana hanging out with Artemis and the Amazons, and there's like actual ladies with Diana focusing on them. Thank you, Steve Orlando, for doing that.
You knew what was up.
I'm looking forward to this book.
That guy knows how to read the runes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your next one, Jonesy?
Walk Through Hell number 3 from Aftershock. Written by Garth Ennis, art by Goran Suzuka. Colors by Ives Svorchina. Good lord. And then letters by Rob Steen. Scary. Scary book. Enjoy it immensely. What's next for you?
My last one is Saga number 54. From Image Comics, written by Brian K. Vaughan, art by Fiona Staples, letters and design by Phonographics. This issue ends ridiculously.
We will discuss Saga in a few minutes.
Oh, I'm not going to give any spoilers, by the way, so don't worry. What's your last one?
Action Comics 1001, just because it's fun to say. Brian Bendis wrote it. Patrick Gleason's on art, thank God. Alejandro Sanchez is doing colors. Josh Reed does letters.
I liked the firefighter character that was introduced. I think she's great.
That's all I got. That's my top 5. Every week, we take to social media to ask you guys a pressing question on our minds. And this week, which projects or announcements from SDCC are you looking forward to the most? We asked, and you answered. MJ, will you please take it away?
On Twitter, Teeny Howard replied, "Someone is letting me write Marvel Knights."
Over on Facebook, Clyde Hall, "Hey Clyde," said, "Cautiously optimistic regarding the Stargirl live-action series for the DC Universe service because it's headed by Geoff Johns and because it involves the JSA.
Jamie Jones on Facebook said, "Kelly Sue DeConnick on Aquaman," with a heart.
Over on Twitter, Milton Lawson at Citizen Milton said, "They called us enemy. New memoir by George Takei from Top Shelf Comics. Also, Invisible Kingdom, the new comic from G. Willow Wilson and Christian Ward, two fantastically talented creators, part of the Amazing Burger Books line from Dark Horse."
And on Twitter, Logan, who is at Midnighter Bay, said, "40 pages of excellent Kelly Thompson penned Jessica Jones comics dropping Beyonce style was my favorite by far."
Back on Facebook, George T. Corzine said, "I'm stoked for what Comics DC's new streaming platform will make available. Not so much about Titans and Robin's filthy language."
On Twitter, Rick Fuss said, "GoBots by Scioli, Lodger by the Laphams, Invisible Kingdom by Wilson and Ward."
Back on Twitter, Haggai Palevsky at Dial H for Haggai said, "Morrison and Sharp's Green Lantern, along with Leia Williams and Chris Bucklow's X-Men Black Emma Frost."
At Nick Paletto on Twitter said, "Uncanny X-Men returning. Shazam trailer was a really pleasant surprise."
Back on Facebook, James Hurd on the Doom Rocket page said, "I only really care about new info re the Steven Universe movie."
And Julia Capra on Facebook had a lot of things she was excited about, just like me. She said, "Chelsea Kane, Odd Cook & Co. on The Vision. Also Kelly Sue's Aquaman. Also Gail architecting Catalyst Prime. Also Nicole Maines on Supergirl. She's going to be playing that new trans character on the show. And listen, I have a lot I'm excited about." I agree, Juliet. Thank you.
Still on Facebook, Matt Strawbridge said, "Green Lantern first because Hal's my favorite. Then Aquaman easily. Shazam sounds great too, as long as there's more than one 5-issue arc before Eaglesham leaves."
And on Facebook, Jody Hauser replied, "Me finally getting to write Force-using characters."
So MJ, let's take 5 to talk about the big saga-shaped elephant in the room.
Yeah. I'm not going to say how the issue ends.
Mm-hmm.
Needless to say, it left me rather wrecked. Have a box of Kleenex. The bigger thing, though, is after the letters page. It's not a letters page as far as reader letters go.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a letter from Brian K. Vaughan saying that he and Fiona are going to be taking off at least a year.
A year.
A year vacation. An intermission, they call it,
mm-hmm.
from making Saga.
Now, from that, we can infer a couple of things. One, perhaps we're at the halfway point of Saga. Two, they're burnt out and they need to, you know, recharge work on some other projects, perhaps take some time for themselves. Staples especially has been working nonstop on Saga for years.
Well,
And the Archie reboot and covers here and there. I mean, it's no small feat.
And her art, she does all the colors. She does all of it.
Yeah.
So I can see why she would want a break.
So what do you think comics are going to look like a year without Saga? Do you think like Image is going to take some sort of market share hit without one of their biggest cash cows being a part of the pie?
I would, yeah. They're going to lose sales just because Saga isn't going to be there to sell.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're going to lose money because Saga won't be there to sell.
Yeah.
We always see a dip in sales on Image books like this when they take big breaks. The last couple times when they've taken little mini vacations in between arcs before, and we do see sales dip in between those. A full year, I'm worried what that'll do, because I mean, everybody knows the sales awfulness that has happened to Sex Criminals since they had such a choppy schedule and they came back to much more regularity in their publishing, but the sales numbers are nowhere near what they used to be.
Because people drop off and they don't come back on.
Yeah.
I think the inverse will happen for me in Saga, because I am at least a year behind. So this year, I'm going to take the opportunity and get caught up all the way. So for me, it'll be like nothing ever happened.
And there are 8 volumes, there will be 9 once this volume, this is the last issue, the volume's going to get published. So there will be 9 volumes for people to still be able to discover and read.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's I don't think the series is going to die.
No.
I don't know. As a reader, I'm really sad about this, man. Because how do you take a year off after you end the issue like this? It's bonkers. It's like,
it's also
bomb dropping, and now we're gone.
I feel like it's really shrewd storytelling. I really, really do. I mean, DC killed off Superman, this is a false equivalency, but DC did kill off Superman, and they went like 3 or 4 months without publishing any Superman comics, so people could really get the impression that he was gone. So, you know, whatever the hell happens at the end of Saga this week, I'm sure is going to really sink in by the time the book returns, which will give it that like emotional gravitas. If it turns out to be a fake out, or whatever they do narratively, or jump ahead in time as Saga's been known to do. But I think the big question is, will you be there when Saga 55 drops?
Well, yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
Just gonna, between this and then, like, WCDIV is gonna be ending within the next year-ish, and it's just gonna, all my books are ending, and that's sad.
That's the thing about eras. They come to an end. The question is, did you enjoy yourself while it was happening?
Well, I don't know about enjoy yourself, because Saga is often an emotional roller coaster.
It is, yeah.
It's funny, though. The last couple end of arcs haven't ended explosively. I don't know. They are back on track.
Good for them.
Back on track with the fucking craziness.
Good for them and good for their break. They earned it.
Yeah, I'm gonna miss being able to sell those single issues of Saga for a while.
I'm sure.
But the trades will always sell. I don't know why I'm getting sad. I'll just be quiet.
You will believe a capitalist can cry. That's it. That's all the time we have for this installment of Casual Wednesdays. Need more of this dweeby little podcast in your life? Check out our 64-episode archive over on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever you get your podcasts. Rate and subscribe and tell us how we're doing, or search Casual Wednesdays over at doomrocket.com. New episodes every Wednesday afternoon, and look us up on Twitter. I'm at @JaredJones_MJ. Where can they find you?
At @MollyJane_K.
So until the day Marvel publishes the presumably controversial Scratch and Sniff Man-Thing issue, I remain Jared, that's MJ, and from all of us here at DoomRocket.com, have a great new comic book day. Imagine how it would smell.
It'd probably smell really mossy. Mossy and stinky.
Yes, stinky is what I was going for.